Joshua Hammer is the author of the new book, The Badass Librarians of Timbuktu and Their Race to Save the World's Most Precious Manuscripts. The book introduces readers to a mild-mannered historian and librarian from Timbuktu who morphed into one of the world's greatest smugglers and pulled off a brazen heist worthy of Ocean's 11. Joshua Hammer was a bureau chief for Newsweek and correspondent at large on five continents. He's now a contributing editor to Smithsonian and Outside and a frequent contributor to the New York Review of Books. Once again, the new book is The Badass Librarians of Timbuktu and Their Race to Save the World's Most Precious Manuscripts. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Josh Hammer to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks.
What brought you to the story?
I was an Africa correspondent, as you said, for Newsweek for many years in the 90s. That's how I first found out about Timbuktu, and I spent a couple of hours there in the mid-90s and had to catch a private plane back. But it tantalized me, and I left Newsweek and became a freelance writer, I read a small news clip about these rediscovered manuscripts out in the desert, and I pitched an editor, a friend of mine at Smithsonian Magazine, about going up there and finding out what was happening. And about a week later, I was on a plane to Timbuktu again, and this time I spent about 5-6 days there and wandered these alleys and entered these dank storage rooms. People opened up these chests filled with moldering manuscripts from the 15th century and 16th century that had just been kind of slowly rotting away in these boxes in people's basements. I was amazed by it. And of course, at the same time, there was also this really nascent effort going on to preserve them. The first libraries were being built. So I continued to follow the story all the way until the jihadis, the Al-Qaeda and the Islamic Maghreb took over most of Mali in 2012.
Tell us a little bit about the beginning, the origins of the story, because for you, this story really begins in the 1980s.
The story begins, begins in the 15th century. We have to go back that far.
Okay.
The story focuses on Abdul Qadir Haidara, who is a mild-mannered librarian, fairly ebullient fellow, in Timbuktu. Father collected these manuscripts and who inherited the collection from him and also basically became a collector for Timbuktu's government library and really spent the next 15 years traveling around the desert and on the river, very inhospitable territory, searching out and buying these ancient manuscripts from people, from collectors who were very suspicious and didn't really want to sell them. So it was a very difficult task for him, but he managed to amass tens of thousands of these manuscripts over the course of his career. Also raised money from international lenders, from everybody from the Foundation in Dubai to the British to the Belgians, and was able to start this wave of libraries across Timbuktu, including his own and many other private ones. So by the time the jihadis invaded the country in 2012 and seized Timbuktu, there was a very lively library scene, unlikely but lively library scene in the middle of this godforsaken city, village, whatever you want to call it. 52,000 people, the total population of Timbuktu, but really in a very inhospitable, remote corner of the world, a place that in fact has become synonymous over the centuries for remoteness.
There are so many of them, but talk a little bit about the significance of the manuscripts as a whole and why they are so historically significant.
Many of these manuscripts come from a time called the Golden Age of Timbuktu in the 15th and 16th centuries when it was the capital, cultural and economic capital of one of the great empires of northern Africa that really extended for thousands of miles along the Niger River, the third largest river in Africa. So you kind of have to just use your imagination to imagine this wealthy town, very different from it is today, from the way it is today, with universities and traders coming from Europe and from sub-Saharan Africa all meeting in this town. A philanthropic king who gave money to intellectuals. So it created this intellectual awakening in this city. Thousands and thousands of these beautiful manuscripts were created by scribes affiliated with these universities an incredible, lively intellectual tradition was born there at that period. And it lasted for really about 150 years until the Moroccan Sultan invaded Timbuktu, took away many of these intellectuals, the scholars and scribes, to prisons, took them as slaves. And that kind of ended Timbuktu's glory years, but you still have this incredible tradition of manuscripts that then were dispersed into the desert, into the Sahara over the next centuries, and largely forgotten.
The history of Timbuktu, as you just outlined, is fascinating. And as you point out, one of the world's great centers of wealth and political power and learning when you do go back as far as the 1500s.
Yeah, absolutely. It is hard to imagine today, especially for anybody who visits Timbuktu, to see this kind of dusty, poor, especially now that it's been seriously damaged by the jihadis, this dusty, poor outpost, and try to imagine that in 500 years ago, it was really one of the centers of the world. And of course, the trade routes changed, the invasion, as I said, by the Moroccans ended its scholastic importance, and then it kind of went to sleep. You had occasional European explorers in the 19th century racing to Timbuktu because it still had this mystical allure. So colonial Britain, colonial France, colonial Germany would dispatch these explorers across the desert to the fabled lost city of Timbuktu to see what it was really like, and there were a couple of very high profile races to get there, in which the equivalent of tens of thousands of dollars were offered to the ones who got there first.
When you consider Mali and now one of the world's poorest countries, you also talk about its history and why this nation is known for this tremendous creativity. Give us a sense of that.
Yeah, what always fascinated me about Mali from the, I think the reason I went there in the first place was because I had gotten very caught up in the music of this country. And the music, of course, is many people who have a real interest in music, when they think of African music, they think of Mali. It's hard to explain why you have such an incredible confluence, such cultural inspiration, such artistic inspiration, music, art, literature coming out of this country. I think that hundreds of years ago, of course, it was the centrifugal force in this vast empire. And so you had lots of people coming from all corners of northern Africa. And of course, when you have these great collision of immigrants from various parts of the continent, it tends, as we see in the United States, it tends to create to unleash creativity, and that tradition has really carried on for centuries. Mali continues to have some of the most amazing music on the planet. Some of the great global musicians like Ali Farka Touré, Grammy Award winner, Salif Keita, another Grammy Award winning singer, come out of Mali. You have this manuscript tradition. You have wonderful art. For me, the best art in Africa was the stuff that I found in Mali. In my house from my years in Africa is still covered with Malian art. It's just one of these inexplicable centers of genius whose influence carries on to this day.
So we started talking about one librarian. How did it become plural? How did we talk about the badass librarians?
Well, he couldn't do this effort alone. He could not sneak hundreds of thousands of manuscripts past the jihadis who had taken control of Timbuktu and the north by himself. It obviously had to be a collective effort. So he began by enlisting family members, by enlisting librarians in the city, trusted people in his circle. The circle gradually expanded to encompass hundreds of people, and they carried out a very complex operation involving a lot of moving parts, a lot of territory, a lot of vehicles, bribes, clandestine packing in the middle of the night, long treks through hostile territory, trips on boat rides on the river, just an incredible number of operations and a lot of people involved in transporting basically thousands of chests filled with 377,000 manuscripts.
Where are we in the story now?
Well, the manuscripts, with a few thousand exceptions, managed to get out of Timbuktu safely. And they're down in the southern part of the country, in the capital, Bamako, which was never in the hands of the jihadis. They're all in climate-controlled storerooms, and Abdul Qadir, who's still in charge of the operation, is waiting for the day when Timbuktu is considered safe enough so that he can begin the reverse and transport the manuscripts back, probably along the river is the smartest and safest way right now. But as any people who follow international affairs and jihadist activities know, Mali's been a target for a couple of terrorist attacks in the last few months, and it's still not safe. The jihadis they can't control any territory anymore as they did a few years ago, but they are out there in the desert, and they have cells, and they're capable of creating deep insecurity. The danger has not passed, so Abdul Qadir just thinks it's not the right time to bring those manuscripts back to Timbuktu. For one thing, I mean, librarians don't want to live there. They're scared, and they're not going to get any tourists to come visit the library, so he's figuring just wait for the right moment, and who knows how long it's going to take.
I'm curious as to the impact of what has been lost is on these librarians.
What the impact of what's been lost in terms of the manuscripts that were destroyed?
Yes.
Very tiny number. I mean, really, when you look at the percentage of it, we're talking about 4,000 manuscripts that were burned by the jihadis in the very last days in a kind of a fit of vengeance as the French army was bearing down on Timbuktu. Some of them were quite valuable, gorgeous manuscripts. I was told that the bulk of them were about mathematics and science, and revealed a certain aspect of Timbuktu society that, obviously there's less of that out there now, but it's not like the entire collection was destroyed. It's a tiny percentage. So I think people are reconciled to the fact that, you know, in an operation this large, with the kind of violence that the jihadis inflicted upon this area, they're lucky that they got away with such a small number of casualties.
The name of the book is The Badass Librarians of Timbuktu and Their Race to Save the World's Most Precious Manuscripts. Joshua Hammer, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me. It was a great pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, The Badass Librarians of Timbuktu. It is published by Simon & Schuster. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.